welcome to the Acupuncture Outsider podcast. My name is Richard Hazel, and in the time it takes for you to commute to or from work, I hope to have shared something of interest about orthopedic acupuncture using motor points, trigger points, myofascial slings, neurofunctional acupuncture, segmental treatments, anything that crosses my mind that seems to be of interest. I hope you'll enjoy it. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Acupuncture Outsider. This is Richard Hazel, and today I'm going to talk about a patient I saw for the first time this week. Very interesting. You know, the tough chronic pain patients are always a little more interesting than the average, college athlete injury. And it requires a bit more, intuition and experience and knowledge of things like nerve entrapments. So, because the chronic pain patients wouldn't be in chronic pain if it was easy to figure out, right? They would have been better from, doing physical therapy. And they're not better, so there's something else going on that other people are not able to determine the cause of. And very likely it's going to be musculoskeletal, because MRIs, X-rays, and CT scans, ultrasound, and blood tests will not show myofascial restrictions, adhesions, or nerve entrapments. So now I'm not saying you can't see scar tissue. What I'm saying is the fascia gets stuck together. There are situations where nerves are being irritated by fascia that is not sliding properly. So there's an irritation of the nerve that can be after a scar from a surgery, and it could take years to cause a problem. But eventually, that immobile area around the scar can accumulate edema, inflammation, and start to irritate nerves, usually cutaneous nerves. So this is where your chronic pain patients need you to understand about nerve entrapment, peripheral nerve entrapment. It's not always from the spine. This is why they need us, because they've been through the normal set of testing, which is going to catch and very likely help a high percentage of people, maybe 80 or 90%. If they're coming to someone for acupuncture in chronic pain, and they've been in pain for years, and they've been to all the specialists, you are like their last hope. And they're probably only doing it so they can rule it out and tell their friends they already tried it and now shut up about it. So when they come to us, we really need to actually know some things that other people don't know. And this is why I'm always talking about peripheral nerve entrapments and Dr. Andrea Trescott's book, which has been such an enormous help for me and my patients, like the patient I'm about to tell you about. Because can you imagine what happens to a nerve entrapment patient who sees a specialist who doesn't know what an ilioinguinal nerve entrapment symptoms look like? Well, I'll tell you, because here's the patient. So he's had four low back surgeries. They were putting in spacers, like disc, space between the vertebrae, and he's in chronic pain all the time. He's had neck injuries and neck surgeries as well, but I'm not going to talk about that today. But this is why he's on oxycodone, because he lives with a level of pain that most of us would not be able to tolerate for even a weekend. And he's dealing with it for years. He's only 60, but he's been retired for at least 2 years because of this pain. So So he comes to me. His daughter found me on Google. And because I said, so somebody you know has referred you to me because I'm definitely the person you need to be seeing. And he said, no, my daughter found you on Google and you had really good reviews. So I said, okay, well, thank goodness she found me, because I don't know what happens when you go to somebody who doesn't know what an ilioinguinal nerve entrapment looks like. But he had had his gallbladder removed. And ever since the surgery, he's had this pain along the side under the rib that goes into the front and sometimes into the groin. And so I'm thinking, yeah, that sounds like ilioinguinal, iliohypogastric sort of pain referral. And of course, there's no muscle test for that. You have to palpate. But I can tell you, when you start palpating the transverse abs right above the iliac crest along the side, going forward, and then, sorry about that. And then when I got to the border of his rectus abdominis, that rectus border is a really common entrapment for the ilioinguinal nerve. And it always surprises them that you know exactly where their pain is. But I pressed right at that border of the rectus abs, and he said, oh, that's the spot that's always the worst. And I said, yeah, it's probably where the nerve's entrapped. So we're going to find out. And I told him, you know, my first treatment is part treatment and part diagnostic, because I have to test out theories. I don't have some magical machine that can tell me exactly what's going on. I have to know based on symptoms and patient feedback and touching. So, but I became pretty convinced that this was what was going on. And by the way, he also had the same side lateral femoral cutaneous nerve entrapment issue going on, but I'll talk about that another time. But I did treat that as well and successfully, knocked out the pain. But he was having horrible back problems, and, you know, so I did it my normal back treatment for him and the psoas and everything, you know. Of course, that felt way better, but the great part was how his always constant side pain was gone. And I said, you know, it might come back, because the treatment was to see if I'm correct, and if you have relief, then I know there's more for me to do. And what I'm probably going to have to do is palpate in the thoracolumbar area, probably somewhere T12 L1 area, paraspinals, to see if that's really where the issue is starting. And then we have to just kind of go through the whole area under the ribs through the transverse abs, and then there may be a little bit of dry needling that needs to be done at the in the rectus abdominis area. We're going to see. I don't know yet, but I was so happy that he got relief, because it means at least I'm on the right track. Those entrapments can be a little tricky. And I have somebody to refer him to in very nearby if it seems he needs an injectate, like a... hydrodissection, if necessary, but we'll see. I very often am knocking this out with acupuncture in a few visits. The lateral femoral cutaneous burning often is better in a couple visits as well. So I'm feeling confident that I'm not going to be referring him out, but I'm not confident that he won't come back next week with it back or partially back. We're going to see. We'll see what happens. But I felt really good for him, because I could tell this was like the first time in a long time that he was standing with no pain. Because when that ilioinguinal nerve is entrapped like that, it's just constant. It's like it, no matter what move he would make, especially if he would have to stretch his torso in any direction, he had that pain. So, and nobody could tell him what it was. And That's the other horrible thing when you're in chronic pain and the doctors don't know what to tell you. They did all the tests that ruled anything out. They knew it wasn't a tumor. They knew that his gallbladder had already been removed. It was actually on his right side, this pain, not the left side. So that's an interesting twist. But anyway, most of his pain was right-sided. So we're going to see where it goes from there. But I just wanted to mention it because I want to encourage people to become curious about nerve entrapments. This is sort of advanced because it's not some series of manual muscle tests you're going to go through or length tests. You have to know what the symptoms would be and then where to palpate because you have to know where the entrapment zones are. And so that, you know, it takes some time to read. I'm constantly reading and learning. I don't feel like I have any advanced level of understanding of peripheral nerve entrapments, but I'm, you know, dipping my toes in the water. This is sort of how I learned about trigger points. I had the Trevell and Simons volumes 1 and 2, and anytime something seemed relevant, I would read the whole chapter on that muscle, what its trigger points, where its trigger points might be, what the symptoms might be, pain referral patterns, best locations for needle, all that sort of stuff you read. And if you don't read the footnotes, then you're missing some really important stuff too. They'll talk about the type of patient who ends up with that problem. And Dr. Trescott does the same thing. She'll mention the cases where you'll see this and what were the things that caused it, whether it was sports related, was it an intramuscular injection injury. There's lots of ways, surgery, scars from surgery, etc. And you want to know all those etiologies because when your patient's telling you a story about their situation, you want to be able to ask them relevant questions about that things that could rule in or out the peripheral nerve entrapment. Like the patient that I'm seeing who had a superior gluteal nerve injury when she fell on the ice, she landed on her glute. And after that, she had very weak single leg stance. And she, it wasn't quite a Trendelenburg, but she had very little stability. She had a very hard time standing. And I told you about her already, but you know, nobody mentioned that. Like when I was seeing her, she was just telling me her symptoms. She's in PT and she was just saying, you know, this side hurt, this hip hurts, and you know, it's weak. And so I was treating it as a normal injury of hip muscles and working on deep rotators and abductors, glutes, you know, the whole thing. And I only became suspicious when I realized that I had a hard time getting the glutes to fire properly with the electric stim. So I started suspecting there's some inhibition in the muscles. And I, you know, I asked her if there had been any, has she had any injury? I pressed into that area where the superior gluteal nerve comes out right above the piriformis and below the ilium and pressed up and recreated the pain that Dr. Trescott talks about for when it's entrapped there by the glutes and the piriformis. And it kind of confirmed that this was a possibility. So I asked her, you know, like what has happened? Did you have an injury in the car, like a car accident? Because Dr. Trescott mentions that, you know, that nerve can get entrapped from a straight leg bracing in a car accident. And she said, no, I haven't. But this winter I fell on that side. And after that, it was terrible. And then that, you know, that's all I needed to know. It was a trauma to the muscle. And very likely those muscles got super tight and probably the fascia got stuck and that nerve got irritated and compressed by some inflammation or edema, we've been working through that, and she's doing really well. But it has taken at least 3 visits of treating that specifically as a superior gluteal nerve entrapment to get to where she is. She felt improvement after the first treatment like that, but she's going to PT and she's getting validation from her single leg stance and her exercises that it's now finally getting better and she can feel the muscles firing. She felt she could feel them firing better after the first visit, even though I had such a hard time getting the muscles to react to the electric stimulation. And I did a discontinuous high frequency, 3 seconds on, 3 seconds off for, I don't know, maybe it was 5 seconds or 5 minutes or 6 minutes. I was standing there to watch. I didn't want her to be too sore. But then by the third visit, I was starting to see the muscles firing and I was very excited. I was using my pointer Excel and stimulating the glute medius and seeing it start to really fire. I it's those nerdy things that make you excited, but I was like so happy to see her glute medius starting to actually react to the electric stimulation. So, and she told me she's doing way, way better. I'll probably see her again soon because I think she probably needs like one more visit to really get back to normal. But I think, what's crazy is she went back to her physical therapist and she told them my theory, and the physical therapist said, well, yeah, that's obvious. Well, if it was obvious that it was a superior gluteal nerve entrapment, why did you not at least communicate that with the patient? I'm not going to say they didn't know. I'm going to say they weren't thinking of it that way and were not communicating at all with the patient what they thought. I like to be so transparent with my patients, like as I'm thinking, almost stream of consciousness, I'm telling them, what am I seeing? What am I thinking? What is my theory? What are my other workable theories? It may be more than they want to know, but I want them to understand that this is not hocus pocus and I'm not just going to put needles in and do my thing and then see how they feel. I'm walking through the process. I'm saying this is a complicated situation. So I'm testing my theory. I have these other theories that could be valid, but I'm not going to treat it as those, or we won't know what helped. So I'm sticking with this theory. We're going to see how you do. If it's not responding, then I'm going to try my other theories and we'll see what works. But I don't like to just throw everything at the wall and see what sticks, because I really need to know what helped. That's going to help me in the future not just for helping other patients, but for follow-ups with that patient. If I know exactly what the problem was and we only need 2 needles, that's so much better than if we have to do like side-lying, face up, face down every time because I do all 3 things or 4 things, who knows what the different, diagnosis, dual diagnosis sort of things are. That's just no way to work. So I'm thinking out loud and I'm humble enough to tell them that I'm not positive. I think this is what's going on and I'm not going to pretend that I know. And I think people appreciate when you tell them that you think something, but you're not quite sure, because they've already seen lots of experts who were quite sure and were not getting the result that they expected. So, and anyway, I just wanted to talk about that patient. I'll probably be coming back to him because he's such a complicated case. If you could feel what his neck extensors feel like, they are like a rock. He injured his neck playing sports 20 years ago. Or no, 40 years ago. He was in his 20s. And his neck is like, oh my God, it's like a rock. You cannot, and with a big scar down the back. From the surgery that they did. They did one from the front. They did one from the back. He's had 4 low back surgeries. He had a gallbladder taken out, man. And so he lives with a lot of pain, but I'm feeling really optimistic because he was physically active most of his life, even at work. He had a job where he was physically active. And it makes such a difference when you are using electric stimulation on the motor points of the muscle on someone with healthy muscle that responds. I was able to get such good results on his first visit because all of his muscles responded well to the electric stim. They moved, they released. He was kind of in shock, and I was a little bit in shock at how good he felt and how he was able to stand up based on how difficult it was for him to walk in to the clinic. And it's because he stayed active. He has healthy muscles. The people who become sedentary are harder to treat. I was treating a woman this week for the first time for her knees, and with all of the needles in her quads, I had my Pantheon cranked. And I don't go up to anything that feels uncomfortable for them, but I really had to go up. The Pantheon goes on the intensity wheel, goes up to a 6, and I had her up to 4 or 5 to try to even get a little bit, a tiny bit of needle movement from the motor points. And I know my points were accurate because I tested with the pointer and could feel the muscle move, but with the stim on just going without pressing on the muscle, there was so little response. And that's typical of sedentary people, especially older people who become sedentary. They just are not active and their muscles show. The 70 and 80 year olds that I treat who are physically active, they like to cycle, they walk every day, or they do something physical, their muscles will release, their muscles will respond. The sedentary people, it's so frustrating and difficult. You want to deliver them what they came to see you for. And they're very likely, if you're not explaining it, and you have to be like diplomatic about it, but if you're not explaining like why it's going to take them longer, they're going to think it's you. They're going to think, oh, well, my friend said it was great, but I didn't feel anything, you know, but they don't realize they're responsible for the fact that they have been completely sedentary, inactive, and now want me to fix them in one session. So that's the challenge with sedentary older people. It's why everybody loves to work on the athletes, because they feel great and you look great. You look good. You know, you can do so little on someone young and they'll feel better. It gets much more difficult when you're dealing with chronic pain and surgeries and scars and inactivity, like the fact that they just barely move, can barely move. That's where it gets really rough. And that's where, you know, communicating with them to set expectations becomes really important. Or they're just going to think you don't know what you're doing because it didn't help in one treatment. Even though, you know, of course, they've been suffering for 10 years and nobody else helped them. But, you know, they still want magic when they go to acupuncture. They want magic, right? Because they, you know, they already think it's hocus pocus. So it must be, you know, like magically hocus pocus. So I just wanted to talk about that patient, and I will come back to him as I get updates, but I was so happy for his first visit to be really as successful as I could hope it would be. And of course, there's so much more to do for him. His arms are atrophied because his neck has been such a problem. He doesn't have good, circulation, and you know, his arms have been weak for a long time. There's a whole lot more we're gonna be working on. So you may be hearing more episodes about this one patient, because I have a feeling we're gonna see some really good stuff, and I think I'll probably get stumped somewhere here and there along the way, and I will be letting you know. All right. So have a great week, and I will talk to you soon.